flight instructors. They're subject to human factors, too. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller, CFI, editor of Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot, and operator of his own flight school in the Buffalo, New York area. And we're going to talk about safety issues today, as we do every Monday. Bob, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Paul. My pleasure.
You wrote in your most recent edition of Over the Airwaves an article entitled Breaking the Accident Chain Early. I think what I wanted to talk about today with you was, could we be sometimes too intimidated by a CFI or his credentials to ask the questions that we need to ask? We are that second person up there. We're the second. We hear so much about cockpit resource management, about taking advantage of all the expertise and that second set of eyes, about talking to our passengers when we take passengers up, about helping them keep eyes outside the aircraft looking for traffic, or maybe keeping an eye on an engine indicator that we can't see as clearly from our side of the aircraft, all that stuff. And yet we hear about accidents that happen in which a student did not question something a CFI was doing. Tell us about the particular case you mentioned in the newsletter.
In this particular case, it was a night training mission where a CFI and a student were departing in a Cessna 152. The CFI took the task of checking the fuel, doing the fuel planning and flight planning for the night flight. And as they departed, they encountered a problem along the way. One of it's an older airplane, the generator annunciator light began to flicker. And the CFI, apparently unquestioned by the student, continued the flight through a series of night landings to six series of airports. When the engine now began to stumble a little bit, they found themselves in a situation where they didn't have as much fuel on the airplane as the CFI had thought they had. They had to initiate a night landing, but they having ignored the generator annunciator light, they failed to note that they had lost all electrical power. Now they're faced with a situation of having to make an emergency landing at night with no ability to turn on the pilot-controlled lighting. So you can see an accident chain develop from the point that the poor fuel planning to the ignoring of an annunciator light showing the loss, potential loss of electrical power, and now the inability to turn on the pilot-controlled lighting for a night landing.
Well, I have to mention here, if you're down on power to the point where you can't click the radio, the landing light is probably out of the question.
Yeah, landing light's out of the question. The CFI attempted three times. Three passes, according to the NTSB report, at a landing, and failed on the third pass, and with fatalities. So it's a situation where, sure, we can blame the CFI, but can we blame the student? Should the student had raised an eyebrow over the flickering of the alternator warning light or the generator warning light? Very often we CFIs can hold ourselves out as the all-being, all-knowing expert and not to be questioned. This clearly is not in the best traditions of cockpit resource management the way it's being described and taught today as it should be. The student is part of the crew. In an instrument flight, the student is PIC as well as the CFI is also being PIC. But when we CFIs hold ourselves out as being above mistake or above reproach and the student does not speak up, then we're putting both of us at risk of making an error. There are countless times, and I'm not ashamed to admit it, where I've had a student, even a primary student, say, Bob, listen, look at this, or look at that, or what do you think about this, or what do you think about that? And I will say, sure, let's look at it. Let's discuss it. You know, one of my great quotations that I have hanging in my office was by Socrates, the old Greek philosopher. Mm-hmm. And I use his quote to evaluate students. And the quote goes something like this: the larger the island of knowledge, the longer the shoreline of wonder. And to me, that means when students begin questioning me as the CFI, I know they are now learning. They are raising questions that can be based only upon having an adequate baseline of knowledge. I'm fearful of the student that doesn't ask questions, who never questions, who just rides along and whatever the CFI wants to do. that's a student that is not developing the kind of questioning attitudes that he should have.
Now, I want to approach this more during or after the break, but I want to back up just a step and talk about the equipment in this case. There are a lot of flight schools which have old Cessna 152s or 150s still on the flight line. And, I've been in situations where I was a little bit unnerved when, this is going to be a gross exaggeration, but, it's not starting. And he says, it's just kind of cantankerous. She's an old bird. Just go kick it. Just whack on the cowl right here and it'll start, it's sometimes the bailing wire thing, I think, comes to be taken for granted in some of these older planes.
Very quickly, just a quick story. I remember as an instrument student, I was getting ready to take out one of these old birds that you described. And when I started up in pre-flight, I noted that the vacuum pump wasn't working. I shut down and went to the owner or the operator of the FBO. I says, I'm going out on an instrument flight with my instructor, and the vacuum pump doesn't work. And the old guy behind the desk says, what do you think partial panels for? and he was serious,
Yeah.
Well, partial panel is great, but not entering real IMC conditions on a real flight. But you're absolutely right. Sometimes these old airplanes need to be questioned by students, even more so than their instructors.
All right. Well, we'll come back and talk more about questioning the old instructors in a moment. My guest is CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. We'll be back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Platt. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, and we're talking about when it might be appropriate to question your flight instructor. And Bob, I want to ask you a couple of kind of pointed questions here. We read about and we're studying in private pilot training about human factors, and the FAA has identified some very specific personality types or behavior types, which are signals that a problem might be on the horizon. This is going to be a hard question, but I don't think you'll shy away from it. Are there certain types of personalities who just should not be flight instructors?
There's no question about that. We know the data is now showing us that less than 50% of every private pilot start, that is, every private pilot candidate who has a medical, less than 50% make it to the private pilot check ride. In other words, we have a dropout rate of student pilots greater than 50%. Now, we have to ask ourselves, why is this? Certainly, some got in and they found that the expenses were more than they could bear. They may have gotten in and they've had a job change or a change in personal family situation. But we're looking at a greater than 50% dropout rate. In my opinion, most of the dropout rates today is because of poor personal interpersonal communications between the student and the flight instructor. I had a student, a young lady, 23 years old, who recently went on to a major Florida flight school, and for her commercial multi, she's on a career path for the airlines.
Mm-hmm.
And I called her about 3 months into her training, and I said, how are you doing, Gina? And she says, Bob, I hate it. I absolutely hate it. These guys down here, these pilots, these instructors, they're just beating me up. They're calling me girl things. I can't do this. I can't do that. They're saying I'm not strong enough to pull the yoke back on a Baron. The intimidation factor, it wasn't anything like my experience in working with you. Well, all right, so maybe I came across as her grandfatherly type, and she reacted to some young stud male flight instructors who were exercising a little too much ego. But unfortunately, I think there's far too much of that.
Mm-hmm.
We are using young people who themselves are barely adults as flight instructors today, people who understand the maneuvers but do not understand the interpersonal skills required to deal with a student who's frustrated and discouraged because they can't deal with a particular maneuver. One of the greatest acts of patience that I ever developed came to me as a flight instructor of many years when my wife insisted that I take ballroom dancing lessons. Now, what is the connection, you might ask? When I took ballroom dancing lessons, and my female Russian dance instructor would kick me in the ankles because I could not master a waltz step. To this day, I cannot master a waltz step. I said, if I can't learn to put my feet in the direction that I need to do a waltz, it's perfectly reasonable that an individual might have difficulty flying an airplane. And that really made an impact upon me. I really began to understand that there are people who lack basic skills that I think are second nature, should be second nature, just like dancing is second nature to other people. But does a 20-year-old flight instructor know this? Do they have enough life experiences to deal with this? Now, I'm not degrading or decrying younger flight instructors. I've known a number of highly skilled, very professional young people who are entering the field. But unfortunately, we have far too many who are in it for reasons other than educating people on how to fly. They might be in it for building hours. They resent the fact that they're having to instruct, but they do know that they need hours to qualify for that airline job. Mm-hmm. They're in it for the wrong reason, and unfortunately, the student pays the price. So, how do we fix this? What do we do? I'm really at a loss for an answer there. I've written about this. I've tried to work around it. I'm hiring flight instructors myself. Finding people who have both the experience, the maturity, and the skills is a difficult thing to do in the flight instructing business.
Well, and we have to make sure students understand, too, that no matter what, how many epaulets are hanging off the shoulder or how many, you know, alphabetical acronyms are affixed to the name, this person is human and humans make mistakes. I mean, this accident that we talked about at the beginning of this feature that prompted this whole conversation might have been prevented if the student had said, you know, something doesn't seem right here. And I think one of the things that, you know, just the qualification CFI or CFII or Master Flight Instructor may be intimidating to some people.
Well, it is, and I think it can be. When we put the credentials after our names and we hold ourselves out to being, you know, the best of the best, sometimes we can create that intimidating factor where people don't want to speak up. But that's the difference between not a master flight instructor and a regular flight instructor. That's the difference between a good flight instructor and one that's not so good. And it's just a question of experience. I mean, I don't know how many lives have been saved over the years by students pointing out traffic in the traffic pattern that an instructor may not see. You know, if we can instill in our students the authority and the responsibility to be a member of the cockpit crew, to speak up when they see something, that's gonna serve us all well. But we have to get the ego out of the CFI's mindset. We have to understand that students are there because they want to be there. We may not want to be there from time, you know, sometime after another, but the bottom line, lives are at stake. And the other bottom line is we've got to get more pilots into the system, and we have to make the whole training experience fun, enjoyable, worthwhile. Again, that goes back to what I like to do in terms of doing most of my training on cross-country flights. With convenient stops at airport cafes. You know, there's lots of ways that we can make flight training fun and enjoyable and create good pilots at the same time.
Now, I am not by any means or stretch an expert in any aspect of training, but I will recommend one thing that I learned to anyone who's starting, and that is that before I started, I interviewed 5 flight instructors, and they were all different. They had a different approach, you know, to various things, and I found somebody who was a good match for my personality type, and sometimes the match is more important than either person individually.
You did the first right thing. The only thing that I would do in addition to that, and that's a very good thing that you did, is check references.
Right.
When you found that good flight, the one you thought fit, say, hey, listen, John or Jack or Mary or Joan, can I have the names of the last 3 or 4 people that you brought through a rating? And if they readily give you those names, that's a first good sign. If they're resistant to share those names, that's a very bad sign. But checking references is always a good thing to do in all business endeavors. But very often, you know, the The person walks in off the street, looks to see somebody, you know, with CFI, and figures, well, the feds say he's okay to teach. He might as well be as good as the next one. That's a dangerous way to go about it.
Bob, we all put our pants on one leg at a time, just like everybody else.
Yeah, right.
All right. Well, listen, we always appreciate these conversations to start our week with a safety topic, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks a lot, Paul.
You can find Bob Miller's writings at overtheairwaves.com. And you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.